of the audience who have never salsa danced before up onto the stage. Let's see now. The spotlight began bouncing around the audience. Alice watched the light, hoping Roger had the sense to choose a couple who could actually walk. The spotlight stopped on Alice and Nick, and they both held up their hands to shield their eyes. Yes, those two blinking like rabbits in the headlights look like the perfect victims, don't you think, Barb? Said Roger. Olivia, Tom, and Madison jumped from their seats like lottery winners. They began pulling at their parents' arms, shrieking, Yes, yes! Mom and Dad, dance! Come on! No, no, pick somebody else. Alice swatted away their hands in a panic. She never, ever volunteered for this sort of thing. I think they'd be perfect, Roger, said Barb from the stage with a big game show hostess smile. I'm going to kill them, said Nick quietly. Then he yelled, Sorry, bad back. The old people weren't buying that. They were the ones with arthritis. Bad back my foot, cried out an old lady. Have a go, you mug. Don't be party poopers. Don't worry, the sick feeling will go away, Daddy, said Olivia sweetly. Dance, 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 shouted the old people, stamping their feet with surprising energy. Nick sighed and stood up. He looked down at Alice. Let's just get it over with. They walked up onto the stage, Alice pulling self-consciously at her skirt, worried it was riding up at the back. Franny shrugged from her place in the front row and held up her hands in a nothing-to-do-with-me gesture. Facing each other, please, said Roger. Roger stood behind Nick and Barb stood behind Alice. Their parents maneuvered them, so Alice's hand was on Nick's shoulder, his around her waist. Closer now, boomed Roger. Don't be shy. Now look into each other's eyes. Alice looked miserably up at Nick. His face was blankly polite, as if they were two strangers who had been pulled out of the audience. This was excruciating. Come on now, are you a man or a mouse? Roger clapped his son on the shoulder. The man has got to take charge. You're the leader, she's the follower. Nick's nostrils twitched, which meant he was highly irritated. In a sudden movement, he put his hand on Alice's lower back and pulled her close to him, frowning masterfully in an over-the-top imitation of his father. The audience erupted. I think we've got a natural here, folks, said Roger. His eyes met Alice's and seemed to be sending her some sort of kindly message. He was a pompous old twit, but he meant well. Okay, light on your toes, said Barb, demonstrating to Nick. And forward on your right foot, back with your left foot, rock back onto your right foot, step back with your left foot. Shift your weight to your left foot, step back with your right foot. That's it. That's it. And let's get those hips moving, cried Roger. Alice and Nick didn't dance much in public. Alice was always too self-conscious, and Nick wasn't fussed either way. But sometimes at home, if they'd had wine with dinner, and they had the right sort of CD on while they were packing the dishwasher, they danced in the kitchen. A silly, hamming-it-up dance. It was always Alice who initiated it, because actually she quite liked to dance, and actually she wasn't bad. She began to move her hips in imitation of her mother, while trying to keep the top half of her body still. The crowd roared its approval, and she heard a child, probably Olivia, shout, Go, Mummy! Nick laughed. He was stepping on her toes. Barb and Roger were grinning like Cheshire cats. She could hear their children shouting out from the audience. There was still chemistry. She could feel it in their hands. She could see it in his eyes. Even if it was just a memory of chemistry, there was still something. Alice's head was dizzy with hope. The music stopped. See? Anyone can learn to salsa, cried Roger, as Nick dropped his hands from her waist and turned away. Elizabeth's homework for Jeremy. We were driving to the family talent night when I had a sudden craving for television. House was on. I needed to see Dr. House being nasty and sarcastic while he diagnosed impossible medical conditions. What would Dr. House say about me? I wish you were more like Dr. House, Jeremy. You're so nice and polite. It's annoying. Niceness doesn't cure anyone. Why don't you just bring me face to face with a few home truths? You're infertile. Get over it, House would sneer, brandishing his cane, and I'd be shocked and invigorated. Can we turn around? I told Ben. He didn't try to change my mind. He's being very gentle and careful at the moment. The adoption application forms have disappeared from the kitchen counter. He's put them away, temporarily. I can see the idea still shining in his eyes. He still has hope, which is exactly the problem. I cannot afford any more hope. I rang him after I got the blood test results, and when I went to speak, I found no words came out of my mouth. And when he didn't say anything, I knew he was trying not to cry. You can always tell when he's trying not to cry. Like he's fighting off something invisible trying to take over his head. We'll be okay, he finally said. No, we won't, I thought. Yes, I said. I almost told him the truth. Actually, no, I didn't. Not even close. After House, I watched Medium, and then Boston Legal, and then Cheaters. That's the show where they spy on real people cheating on their spouses and then confront them with television cameras. It's seedy and grey and trashy. We sure do live in a seedy, grey, trashy world, Jeremy. It's possible my mental health is poorly at the moment. The show was over and the adults were standing around, drinking tea and coffee from paper cups and balancing pikelets on serviettes in the palms of their hands. A huge gang of grandchildren and great-grandchildren were whooping with joy, racing on wheelchairs down the front of the hall. "Should they be playing on those?" Alice asked Franny, trying to be a responsible grown-up, as she saw Madison pushing a chair with Olivia and Tom squished in side by side, their legs stuck straight out in front of them. "Of course not," sighed Franny. "But I think it might be one of our residents running the race." She pointed to the white-haired man she'd been arguing with earlier, who was wearing the shiny polka-dot waistcoat. He was racing along in a wheelchair, spinning the wheels with his hands, yelling, "You can't catch me!" Franny's lips twitched. "He's 85, going on 5. She paused. "Actually, I might just take some photos for the newsletter." She hurried off. Nick, Alice, and Ella were left together. Well, that was quite a performance. Ella was carrying Billy, who had his thumb in his mouth, his head draped over her shoulder. She squinted over his head at Nick and Alice as if they were scientific specimens. That was the last thing I expected to see. "Just wanted to show Dad up," said Nick. He picked up a scone and put the whole thing in his mouth. "Are you hungry?" asked Alice. She scanned the tables. "Do you want a sandwich? They've got curried egg." Nick liked curried egg sandwiches. He cleared his throat uncomfortably and glanced at Ella. "No, that's okay. Thanks." Ella was now openly staring. "So how come you're the only one of the sisters here tonight, Ella?" asked Alice. Normally the flakes traveled in a pack. "Well, to be frank, Alice," said Ella, "they sort of refused to be in the same room as you." Alice flinched. Goodness. She wasn't used to provoking such violent reactions in people, although then again she didn't mind the idea of having such power over the flakes. It was sort of delicious. "Ella," remonstrated Nick. "I'm just saying it like it is," said Ella. "I'm trying to stay neutral. Of course it would help if you gave back Rennie Love's ring, Alice." "Oh, that reminds me." Alice unzipped her handbag, pulled out a jewelry box. "I brought it to give to you tonight. Here it is." Nick took the ring slowly. "Thank you." He held the jewelry case in his palm as if he didn't know what to do with it, and finally stuffed it into the pocket of his suit jacket. "Well, if it's that easy," said Ella, "maybe I should bring up another few issues like, I don't know, the financial situation." "Ella, this is really none of your business," said Nick. "And why are you being such a cow over the custody?" "Ella, this is not acceptable," said Nick. "Moo," said Alice. Ella and Nick stared. Alice recited, Who says moo? A cow says moo. She smiled. Sorry, it just came into my head when you said cow. Billy lifted his head from Ella's shoulder, removed his thumb from his mouth, and said, Moo. He grinned appreciatively at Alice before replacing his thumb and putting his head back down on Ella's shoulder again. Ella and Nick seemed lost for words. I guess it must come from a book we used to read the children, said Alice. It had been happening a lot. Strange words and phrases and lines from songs kept appearing in her head. It seemed that those 10 years' worth of memories had been stuffed in a too small cupboard at the back of her mind, and every now and then a fragment of nonsense would escape. Any second now, that cupboard door was going to burst open and her head was going to overflow with memories of grief and joy and who knew what else. She didn't know if she was looking forward to that moment or not. I dropped something the other day, said Alice, and I said, Oh my dosh, and it just sounded so familiar. Oh my dosh. Olivia used to say it when she was little, said Nick. He smiled. We all said it for a while. Oh my dosh. I'd forgotten that. Oh my dosh. Am I missing something here? Said Ella. Maybe it's time you got Billy home to bed, said Nick. Right, said Ella. Fine. I'll see you on Sunday. She kissed Nick on the cheek. Sunday? Mother's Day? Lunch with Mum? She said you were coming. All right. Yes, of course. How did Nick handle his social life without Alice? That was her job, telling Nick what he was meant to be doing on the weekend. He must be missing things all over the place. Bye, Alice, said Ella, without making a move to kiss her. The only person in 2008 who didn't seem intent on plastering her with kisses. She paused. Thanks for giving back the ring. It means a lot to our family. In other words, you are not our family any longer. No problem, said Alice. You're perfectly welcome to that horrendous ring. When Ella had gone, Nick looked at Alice and said, Still haven't got your memory back then? Not quite. Any minute now. How are you coping with the children? Fine, said Alice. No need to mention her daily failures with lost permission notes, unwashed school uniforms and forgotten homework. Or how she didn't know what to do when they fought with each other over the computer or the PlayStation. They're lovely. We made lovely children. I know we did, said Nick. His face seemed to collapse. I know we did. He paused as if not sure whether he should speak, and then said, That's why the thought of only seeing them on weekends kills me. Oh, that, said Alice. Well, if we don't get back together, then of course we should do the 50-50 thing. 1 week for you, 1 week for me. Why not? You don't mean that, said Nick. Of course I do, said Alice. I'll sign something. Fine, said Nick. I'll get my lawyer to draft something. I'll have it couriered over to you tomorrow. No problem. Once you get your memory back, you're going to change your mind, said Nick. He laughed harshly. And you're not going to want to get back together. I'd put money on that. $20, said Alice, holding out her hand. Nick shook her hand. Done. She still loved the feel of his hand holding hers. Wouldn't her body tell her she hated him? I found out it was Gina's husband who kissed the woman in the laundry, said Alice. Not you. Oh, yes, the infamous laundry incident. Nick smiled at an old lady with a walking stick in one hand, attempting to hand around a sagging plate of sandwiches. Oh, all right, you twisted my arm. He took a sandwich. Alice noted it was curried egg. What did you mean when you said you found it interesting that I thought that was you? Asked Alice, taking a sandwich herself to save it from sliding onto the floor. Because I was always saying to you, I'm not Mike Boyle, said Nick. Even with his mouth full of sandwich, she could hear the leftover anger in his voice. You identified so strongly with Gina. It was as if it was happening to you. I said to you, but it wasn't me. You got so caught up in that all men are bastards thing. I'm sorry, said Alice. Her sandwich was ham and mustard, and the taste of mustard was reminding her of something. This constant feeling of fleeting memories was like having a mosquito buzzing in your ear when you're asleep. And you know that when you turn out the light, it will have vanished until you lie back down, close your eyes, and then... bzzz. Nick wiped his serviette across his mouth. You don't need to be sorry. It's all water under the bridge now. He paused and his eyes went blank, looking back on a shared past that Alice couldn't see. He said, I often think the four of us were too close. We got all tangled up in Mike and Gina's marriage problems. We caught their divorce like a virus. Well, let's just get better from it, said Alice. How dare this stupid Mike and Gina come into their lives, spreading their germy marriage problems? Nick smiled and shook his head. You sound so... He couldn't find the right word. Finally, he said, young. After a pause, he continued. Anyway, it wasn't just Mike and Gina. That's too simplistic. Maybe we were too young when we got together. Do you think fame might have gone to Olivia's head? Alice followed his gaze to see Olivia back on stage. She had the microphone held close to her mouth and was doing a grandiose performance of some song they couldn't hear because the sound was turned off. Tom was on his hands and knees next to her, following the microphone lead back to the power plug. Madison was sitting in the front row of empty chairs in the audience, next to the white-haired wheelchair race organizer. They were deep in conversation. Tell me a happy memory from the last 10 years, said Alice. Alice. Come on, what's the first thing that comes into your head? God, I don't know. I suppose when the children were born. Is that too obvious an answer? Although not the actual births, I didn't like the actual births. Didn't you? Said Alice, disappointed. She'd imagined herself and Nick sobbing and laughing and holding each other while a movie soundtrack played in the background. Why not? I guess I was in a crazy panic the whole time, and I couldn't control anything, and I couldn't help you. I kept doing the wrong thing. I'm sure you didn't. Nick glanced at Alice, then looked away again quickly. And all the blood and you screaming your head off, and that incompetent obstetrician who didn't turn up until it was all over with Madison. I was going to knock him out. If it wasn't for that midwife, she was great. The one we said could have been Melanie Barker's twin sister. He looked distractedly down at his hands. Alice wondered if he knew he was twisting the skin beneath the knuckle on his finger, where his wedding ring should have been. It had become a habit of his, fiddling with his ring when he was thinking. Now he was still doing it, even though he wasn't wearing the ring. And when they had to do the emergency cesarean with Olivia, Nick shoved his hands in his pockets. I genuinely thought I was having a heart attack. How horrible for you, said Alice, although she guessed maybe it hadn't been a barrel of laughs for her either. Nick smiled and shook his head in wonder. I remember I didn't want to distract them from you and the baby, you know, like some man in a movie who faints. I thought, I'll just die discreetly in this corner. I thought you were going to die too, and the children were going to be orphans. Have I ever told you that before? I must have. I thought we were talking happy memories. Alice was appalled. Without those memories, it felt like all that blood and screaming was still ahead of her, still to be endured. The happy part was when it was all over and quiet, and they left us alone with the baby all wrapped up. And we could talk about which doctors and nurses we hated, and have a cup of tea, and just look at the baby for the first time. Count their tiny fingers. That new little person. That was... special. He cleared his throat. What's your saddest memory of the last 10 years? Said Alice. Oh, I've got lots of contenders. Nick smiled strangely. She couldn't tell if it was a nasty smile or a sad one. Take your pick. The day we told the children we were separating. The day I moved out. The night Madison rang me up, sobbing her heart out and begging me to come home. All around them, people talked and laughed and drank their cups of tea. Alice could feel the warmth from the heaters beating down upon her head. She felt as though the top of her head were melting, softening like chocolate. She imagined Madison on the phone, crying for her dad to come home. He should have put down the phone and come right home that second. And they should have watched a family video together, snuggled on the couch, eating fish and chips. It should have been easy to be happy. There were poor Elizabeth and Ben desperately trying to have a family, while Nick and Alice had just let theirs fall apart. She stepped closer to Nick. Don't you think we should try again? For them? For the children? Actually, not just for them. For us. For the old us. Excuse me. It was another old lady with a blue-grey perm and a wrinkled, happy face. You're Nick and Alice, aren't you? She leaned toward them confidentially. I recognize you from Franny's Facebook page. She mentioned that you were separated now, and I just want you to know that I think you two belong together. I could tell it was true love by the way you danced just then. Franny has photos of us on the internet, said Nick. The old lady turned to Alice. Have you got your memory back yet, love? You know, a similar thing happened to a friend of mine in 1954. We could not convince her that the war was over. Of course, she ended up forgetting her own name, which I'm sure won't happen to you. No, said Alice. It's Alice. Alice, Alice. Tell me she doesn't post photos of the children on the internet, said Nick. Oh, your children are just beautiful, said the old lady. Great. An open invitation to murderers and pedophiles, said Nick. I'm sure she doesn't actually invite people to murder the children, said Alice. Murderers, check out our delicious little victims here. This is serious. Why do you always think bad things can't happen to us? It's just like that time you let Olivia go missing at the beach. You're so blasé. Am I? Said Alice, bemused. Had she really let Olivia go missing? We're not immune from tragedy. I'll keep that in mind, said Alice. And Nick's face gave an actual spasm of irritation, as if he'd just been bitten by a mosquito. What? Said Alice. What did I say? Is your sister here? Said the old lady to Alice. I wanted to tell her that I think she should adopt a baby. There must be lots of lovely babies up for adoption after that cyclone in Burma. Of course, in my day, a lot more babies were left on church doorsteps. But that doesn't seem to happen so much anymore, which is a pity. Oh, there's your mother! The old lady spotted Barb, still in her outfit and makeup, holding a clipboard and surrounded by eager old ladies. I'm going to sign up for salsa. You two have inspired me. She tottered off. Will you please tell Franny that I don't appreciate her putting photos of my children on the net? Said Nick. That detached, pompous voice was back. Tell her yourself, said Alice. Nick adored Franny. The old Nick would have been off to accost Franny for a spirited debate. At family functions, they argued about politics and played cards together. Nick sighed heavily. He massaged his cheeks as if he had a toothache, pushing the flesh up around his eyes, causing them to crease oddly, so that his face looked like a gargoyle. Don't do that, said Alice, pulling on his arm. What? Said Nick. Jesus, what? Oh my goodness, said Alice. How did our relationship get so prickly? I should go, said Nick. What happened to George and Mildred? Said Alice. Nick just looked at her blankly. The sandstone lions, Alice reminded him. I have no idea, said Nick. Chapter 27. Oh, Alice, said Alice to herself. It was the morning after the family talent night. The children had been safely delivered to school, and she was sitting at the desk in the study, searching for things to help jog her memory. She'd just stumbled upon the reason why Mrs. Bergen wasn't speaking to her. She sat back in her chair, put her feet up on the desk, and leaned right back on the chair so she was staring up at the ceiling. What were you thinking? It seemed that Alice was an active member of a residence committee lobbying the local council to have their street rezoned, to allow the building of 5-story apartment blocks. Mrs. Bergen was heading up the committee of residents fighting the rezoning proposal. She took her feet off the desk and pulled out the next piece of paper in the file, biting into a Twix bar to fortify herself. She had stocked the pantry with essential chocolate. The children were delirious about this, even while they pretended this was nothing out of the ordinary. It was a clipping from the local paper with the headline, King Street Residents Clash, showing pictures of Mrs. Bergen and Alice. They had photographed Mrs. Bergen in her front garden next to her rose bushes, wearing her gardening hat, holding a mug and looking sad and sweet. "This proposal is an outrage. It will ruin the character and heritage of this beautiful street," said Mrs. Beryl Bergen, who has lived in her King Street home for the past 40 years and raised 5 children there. "Of course it will," said Alice out loud. The photo of Alice showed her sitting in the very chair she was sitting in now, looking grim and officious and definitely 40. She groaned out loud as she read her own words. "It's inevitable," said Mrs. Alice Love, who moved into the area 10 years ago. "Sydney needs high-density housing close to public transport. When we purchased this home, we were told the rezoning would happen in the next 5 years. We took that into account as part of the property's investment potential. The council can't go back on its word and leave people out of pocket." What? What was she talking about? They had no idea that rezoning was a possibility. They had talked about growing old in this house. They had not talked about selling it to a developer to knock it down and build some horrendous modern apartment block. She read on, and somehow she wasn't surprised when she came to the final paragraph. "Alice Love has taken over as president of the Residents for Rezoning Committee, following the tragic death of its founder, Gina Boyle." Of course. Gina. Bloody Gina. She stood up decisively and went into the kitchen, where a tray of freshly baked chocolate brownies was cooling. "Have I ever made these for you?" she had asked the children the night before, showing them the photo in the recipe book. "I asked you once," said Olivia, "but you said they were full of sugar." "Well, yes, but so what?" Alice had asked, while Olivia giggled and Tom and Madison shot each other worried, grown-up glances. She got a Tupperware container, filled it with chocolate brownies, and, without stopping to think about it, marched next door and rang the doorbell. Mrs. Bergen's welcoming smile vanished when she saw Alice, and she dropped the hand that was about to open the screen door by her side. "Mrs. Bergen," said Alice. She pressed her hand to the screen door as if she were visiting her in jail. "I am so, so sorry. I've made a terrible mistake." Elizabeth's homework for Jeremy. "I was delivering a one-day seminar today called Using Direct Mail to Beef Up Your Sales to the Retail Butchers Association. No, I'm not kidding. Any business person or professional can use direct mail to their advantage. Even you could, Jeremy." Feel like driving your car into the nearest telephone pole? Therapist Jeremy Hodges can steer you in a better direction. Free bottle of antidepressants for the first 10 appointments. Or something like that. I'm a bit off my game. Anyway, the butchers were a friendly, interested lot. There was much industry banter going across the room, and some surprisingly astute questions. I thought the butchers were going to be sort of simple, red-faced and jolly, but I think that's an act they put on to sell more sausages. The seminar was going well. It is impossible to feel suicidal when you're explaining how to inject personality into a letter about lamb cutlets. Then I saw someone sitting in the audience with a very un-butcher-like appearance. It was Alice. She looks different these days. Less makeup, I think. Her hair is messier. She's wearing the same clothes, but in a different way. And she's pulled out old things I haven't seen in years. Today, she was wearing a long skirt, a faded cream jersey pulled in at the waist with a big belt, and a glittery tasseled scarf that I recognized from Olivia's dress-up box. She looked lovely, Jeremy, and for once I didn't resent her for having the time and the money to always keep her body in such perfect shape and for not having to stick needles in her stomach every night. When I saw her, she smiled and waved and held a palm in front of her face, meaning, "Pretend I'm not here." For some reason, the sight of her made me feel strangely emotional. My voice quivered as I went to answer a question about postage costs from Bill of Ride Fresh Meats. She came up to me in the morning tea break and said breathlessly, "I feel nervous, like I'm talking to a celebrity." I don't think she was being sarcastic. It was sort of nice. She said, "Why didn't you come to Franny's thing last night?" And I really did nearly tell her the truth, It was dancing away on the tip of my tongue, ready to jump off. Except that it didn't answer her question, and anyway, I knew she'd react exactly the wrong way. Which isn't her fault. Anyone would. But seeing her reaction would push me right over the abyss into crazy land, and I'm only just managing to stay on this side of sanity. I guess I could tell you, Jeremy, at our next appointment. But no, I'm not saying it out loud. I'm just going to wait it out, I guess. Pretend it's not happening and wait for the inevitable, and not let it touch me. Franny's letter to Phil. The family talent night was a triumph, if I do say so myself. Olivia did the most beautiful, silly, funny dance. I nearly burst with pride. And Barb and Roger performed one of their salsa dances, which wasn't unbearable. In point of fact, it was probably the most popular act of the night. All the ladies are desperately in love with Roger. There's no accounting for taste. Alice and Nick even got up to dance, and for a moment there, I thought I might have seen a spark of something between them. However, at the end of the night, I saw Nick stomping out to the car park, obviously in a terrible mood. They take their lives so seriously, these young people. Just appreciate the fact that you can stomp so energetically, I wanted to say to him. I'd pay $1 million to be Alice and Elizabeth's age again for just one day. I'd dance like Olivia's butterfly and bite into crisp green apples and run across hot sand into the surf. And I'd walk as far as I wanted, wherever I wanted, in big, loping, leaping strides with my head held high and my lungs filling with air. And I'd probably have sex. Wasn't sex nice, Phil? It was extremely nice. For some reason, I've been thinking about it lately, and the nights we spent in your cramped little flat in Neutral Bay with the lights winking on the harbour. I'd pay $2 million for just one more night with you in that flat. Not that I have $2 million, or even $1 million. I'd have to take out a loan. My apologies, Phil. I'm in a peculiarly flippant mood. Goodness, I'm going to have to make sure I don't leave this letter lying around for anyone to read. Actually, I might have to destroy it. What if I should drop dead in the middle of the night? What if Barb should find it and show it to the girls? Or far worse, Roger. Elizabeth didn't turn up at the family talent night. I've been trying to call her, but without success. Mr. M, I can't seem to call him Xavier, spent a long time talking with Madison. He said, "She's a very complex, intelligent little girl with a lot on her mind." And I was filled with affection for him. I wonder what's on Madison's mind. I do believe I might have found a new friend, which is a fine and wonderful thing at my age. He's asked me out to dinner at the local Chinese restaurant. I automatically went to decline, and then I thought, for heaven's sake, Franny, why not? "Look, Tom, police car!" cried Alice, as a police car with its siren flashing blue streaked by. "Neenar, neenar!" She turns her head, ready to see an excited little face in the back seat, then realized she was alone in the car, and that Tom was too old to be excited by police cars anyway. And also, she actually didn't remember him as a baby. These involuntary flashes of memory, or whatever they were happening almost every few minutes now. It was like a weird, nervous tic. Just then, at the morning tea break at Elizabeth's seminar, she'd seen one of the butchers taking 2 chocolate biscuits at once, and she only just managed to stop herself from grabbing his hairy wrist and saying, "One is plenty." She constantly found herself heading purposefully somewhere, into the study, the kitchen, or the laundry, and then realizing she didn't know why she was heading there. Once she was all the way across the road, walking up the driveway of Gina's old house, when she stopped and said out loud, "Oh." She picked up the phone and dialed numbers before quickly dropping the phone with no idea who she was calling. One time, while waiting outside the school for the children, she caught herself rocking her handbag, patting it, and humming a song she didn't recognize. "Yummy, yummy, yummy in your tummy, tummy," she'd said at dinner the other night, zooming a spoonful of food toward Olivia's mouth. "I think you might be going a bit crazy, darling mummy," Olivia had said with wide eyes. Her memory was coming back any moment now. She could feel it creeping up on her, like the fuzzy head and ticklish throat that heralded a cold. She just couldn't decide if she should resist it or encourage it. Now she was on her way from Elizabeth's seminar to help in the library at the school. This was something she apparently did every third Thursday, which seemed excessively generous of her. As she drove, she thought about Elizabeth and how smooth she'd been up on stage, talking to all those butchers, making them laugh, telling them what to do. She'd seemed so natural talking into the microphone. So herself. The same way celebrities casually chatted away in interviews to journalists, as if there weren't cameras right in front of them. But then when Elizabeth had talked to her in the break, she had the strangest feeling that Elizabeth wasn't really there, that she was just pretending to be Elizabeth, that she was more herself up on stage than right now. Alice still hadn't even got to talk to her yet about the unsuccessful IVF cycle. She'd called the night before when she got home from the family talent night, but Ben had said Elizabeth was watching a favorite TV show and could she call back once it was over. She never called back, and of course she could hardly talk to her about it when she was working. It was ridiculous that she had no idea what was going on in her own sister's mind. She couldn't even take an educated guess as to how Elizabeth was feeling right now. Angry, devastated, sick of the whole thing. She would try to call her again tonight, but it was weirdly hard to find time once she'd driven the children to all their activities. Helped with homework. So much homework, it gave Alice a headache. She'd actually groaned when she saw the number of worksheets Tom had pulled out from his bag the other night, which wasn't very parental of her. Cooked their dinner, cleaned up, made their lunches, tried to convince them to stop fighting over the computer and the television. By the end of it, she was exhausted. There just wasn't enough time in 2008. It had become a limited resource. Back in 1998, the days were so much more spacious. When she woke up in the morning, the day rolled out in front of her like a long hallway for her to meander down, free to linger over the best parts. Days were so stingy now. Mean slivers of time. They flew by like speeding cars. Whoosh! When she was pulling back the blankets to hop into bed each night, it felt as if only seconds ago she'd been throwing them off to get up. Maybe it was just because she wasn't used to this life. This life as a separated mother of three children. She was doing things differently, trying to slow down time. She had a feeling the new Alice, the one with that snippy voice, wouldn't approve of some of the changes. When she'd picked the children up from school yesterday, Olivia had whined, "I don't want to go to violin." And Alice, who had no idea that she was meant to be going to violin, had said, "Okay, fine," and taken the three children to Dino's, where they'd done their homework sitting at a round table, drinking hot chocolates. And Dino had been quite helpful with Tom's maths homework. There had been a very cranky call from someone about the violin lesson, who had told Alice that she would still have to pay, seeing as 24 hours notice hadn't been given. "Oh well," Alice had said, and was met by a shocked silence. After they had got home from the family talent night, she'd let Madison stay up past 11, baking an enormous Black Forest cake for a Food from Different Cultures Day they were having at the school. "I don't want your help," Madison had insisted before Alice even offered to help. "I want to do it myself." "That's fine," said Alice. "You always say that," Madison said, "and then you end up helping." "I bet you $1,000 that I will not lift a finger to help," Alice had said and held out her hand. Madison stared before giving her that sudden beautiful smile and shaking her hand.
"I want to bet you something for $1,000, Tom said. "Bet me something."
"Me too," shouted Olivia. "Bet me something, Mum."
"No, I'm doing the next bet," said Tom.
"Mum, I bet you,
just hold on while I think of something really good."
"I bet you I can do a handstand for 5 minutes," cried Olivia.
"No, two. No, let's maybe just make it 1 minute."
"I bet you $1,000 I can't count to 1 million, said Tom.
"I mean that I can."
"The way it works is that you give me $1,000 if I can."
"Nobody can count to 1 million, said Olivia solemnly. That would take, like, a week.
No, it wouldn't, said Tom. Okay, so let's say it takes you 60 seconds to count to 60. Or, wait. Okay, maybe you could count, like, to 90 in 60 seconds. So, where's the calculator? Mum, do you know where the calculator is? Mum, are you listening?
Are you children always this tiring? Alice had asked. Sometimes it felt like they sucked every thought out of her brain.
Pretty much, said Tom.
Elizabeth's homework for Jeremy. While the butchers were in groups, brainstorming ideas on butcher paper,
haha,
I sat and thought about the transfer of the last embryo 2 weeks ago. It had been frozen for a year. A tiny, ice-encrusted potential person. When we first started IVF, I would stand at the freezer door and take a sparkly fragment of ice on the tip of my finger and think about my frozen potential children. All those possible people. We had 7 frozen at one time. Such a treasure trove of possibility. This one could be a swimmer. This one could be musical. This one could be tall. This one could be short. This one could be sweet and shy. This one could be funny. This one could be like Ben. This one could be like me. Ben and I talked about it all the time. We sent them telepathic messages of support. Hang in there, we said. Hope you're not too chilly. But as the years went by, we stopped talking like that. We became detached from the process. It was just science. It was just unpleasant medical procedures. We weren't even amazed by the science anymore. Yeah, yeah, they make babies in test tubes. Incredible, but it just doesn't work out for us. This last time, we'd run late and we got a ticket for doing an illegal right-hand turn. It was my idea to do the illegal turn to get there faster, and Ben was so cranky with himself for listening to me, because as a result, we were even later. How could you not see that sign? The policeman had said. And Ben's mouth twisted with everything he probably wanted to say. It was her. The policeman took an incredible amount of time writing out the ticket, as if he knew we were running late and this was part of our punishment. Let's just go home, I'd said to Ben. It's not going to work anyway. This is a sign. Let's not waste our money on the parking. I wanted him to say something positive and comforting, but he was in a bad mood by now. He said, "That's a great attitude. Really great." He's not normally sarcastic. Anyway, I know now that he didn't think it was going to work either. A week later, he was eating Alice's banana muffins and getting all excited about adoption before we even knew if this one had worked or not. The embryologist was a young girl who didn't look all that much older than Madison. She tripped on something when we were walking into the treatment room, which I didn't think was a very good sign. Oops, there goes your embryo. When I was in the chair, with my legs elegantly spread, waiting for the gigantic needle, she muttered something and none of us heard her. There's your embryo, she said again, embarrassed. Maybe it was her first time. We looked, and there projected on the lit-up screen was our potential baby. It looked just like its non-brothers and non-sisters. A froth of bubbles, a magnified drop of water. I didn't bother to marvel. I didn't bother to say anything like, "Oh, isn't it amazing?" I didn't bother to keep the memory in my head, in case I one day had to describe it to my child. I saw you when you were just a pretty little blastocyst, sweetie. I didn't know the doctor who was doing the transfer. My lovely doctor is away in Paris at the moment because her daughter is getting married to a French lawyer. This doctor was a man with a long, somber face, and he reminded me of our tax accountant. An especially ominous sign. We never get refunds. My doctor normally chats away about whatever comes into her head, but this man didn't say anything till it was done. Then he showed us the embryo on the ultrasound. "Good, it's in the right spot," he said blandly, as if my uterus was a piece of industrial equipment. It looked like the others did on the ultrasound. A tremulously blinking star. I knew it wouldn't blink for long. I looked away from the ultrasound screen to Ben, and he was studying his hands. Bad signs all around. Breathe in, breathe out. Breathe in, breathe out.
After the butchers had finished their brainstorming, I went up on stage and told them that my assistant Lila would be taking the remainder of the day, as if that was always the plan. The butchers clapped her amiably when she stood up, a confused look on her face. I walked out. I just couldn't get that blinking star out of my damned head. Alice was walking toward the library at the school. Her body seemed to know that it was through that double red door at the corner of the schoolyard, when Dominic appeared. He looked ruffled, his face creased with worry. "Alice," he said, "I saw you through my office window. I've been trying to phone you." "Sorry," said Alice, "I keep forgetting to charge my phone. Memory." He didn't smile. "I called Nick too," he said. "He's on his way." "You called Nick? Why?" Was he going to fight him for her hand? Challenge him to a duel? Except Nick didn't want her hand anymore. So, you know, maybe not much of a fight. "Sure, mate. Have her." "We've got a problem," said Dominic. "A serious problem with Madison." Elizabeth's homework for Jeremy. After I left the seminar, I got a phone call from Ben. His voice sounded like sandpaper. "Why didn't you tell me?" he said. I hung up. I didn't like his tone. Chapter 28. "Is she all right?" Terror flooded Alice's bloodstream, making her legs wobble so badly she had to hold onto Dominic's arm to steady herself. "Oh, yes, sorry." Dominic smiled distractedly and patted Alice on the arm. "Physically, she's fine. It's just that we've had another incident, and I don't think we can ignore this one."
"Another incident?"
"Another bullying incident."
"Someone is bullying Madison?"
"She would throttle the kid. She would demand to see the parents." She was light-headed with rage. Someone had hurt the Sultana, and she was going to have the brat for breakfast. "Alice," said Dominic. He looked a little stern, school principal stern. "It's Madison who is the bully."
"Madison wouldn't bully anyone."
"She knew her daughter. She'd only known her for 5 days, but she knew her.
And sure, maybe she could be moody and a little, well, aggressive toward her brother and sister when she was riled, but that was just normal sibling rivalry," she hoped. "Her heart was in the right place. Look at the way she helped Olivia choreograph her butterfly dance. Look at the way she helped Tom with his geography homework the other day." Okay, Tom said she was being annoying and it had ended up with Madison stomping off in floods of tears, and Tom slapping his hand to his forehead and rolling his eyes like a miniature version of his father. But, well, Alice's daughter would not, could not be a bully. "Are you still not yourself?" asked Dominic carefully.
"Not quite," said Alice.
"Well, this isn't the first time we've had problems with Madison. A little boy had to have stitches a few weeks ago after an altercation with Madison."
Ah, thought Alice. That was the little incident that Kate Harper had mentioned at the gym. "I know she's having problems after Gina's death and with the divorce," continued Dominic, his forehead puckered with school principal-ish concern. "Alice, I'm so sorry. But this is really..." "Oh." His voice changed as he saw someone over Alice's shoulder. "Here's your... Alice turned around and saw Nick coming toward them. He was wearing his suit and tie and talking into his mobile phone. His aura of business and decisions and important, mustn't-be-disturbed meetings looked alien in the sunlit playground, with the sounds of children chanting something from the open window of a nearby classroom. Dominic caught her eye. "Hope this isn't too awkward." "Yes," said Alice awkwardly. As he got closer, they heard him say, "Well, let's say 2 mil. Does that sound okay?" "Excellent. Bye." He snapped the phone shut with one hand, and Alice wanted to say, "Oh, Nick, honey, stop being such a wanker."
"Dominic, isn't it?"
said Nick, holding out his hand, as if Dominic were there to sell them something.
"Yes, hi. How are you?"
said Dominic. He was about a head taller than Nick and looked like a gangly schoolboy next to him. Alice wanted to hug him, but she wanted to hug Nick too. They seemed like boys dressed up in grown-up bodies.
"This must be pretty important for you to call us both down," said Nick, an edge to his voice.
"Yes," said Dominic, and there was an answering edge in his voice. Madison threatened to stab Chloe Harper with a pair of scissors. She also cut off a huge chunk of her hair and pushed her face into a cake. I'm going to have to suspend her, at least until the school holidays. I think she needs to see a counselor.
I see, said Nick, and he seemed to deflate and sag. All the power had gone to Dominic.
There must be more to the story, said Alice. She must have had a reason.
It doesn't matter about her reason, said Dominic. A bit snootily, Alice thought, for someone who was trying to be her boyfriend. It's unacceptable, and you can imagine how Kate Harper is going to react to this. She's on her way to the school, too.
So Chloe was the horrendous Kate Harper's little girl. Well, there you go. That explained everything.
We'll have to, I don't know, offer some sort of compensation, sighed Nick.
I don't think money is the answer in this particular case, said Dominic.
Kapow!
I didn't mean... Anyway, I've got both girls waiting for us in my office, interrupted Dominic. Alice and Nick followed behind him like naughty children. Alice made an, isn't this appalling, face at Nick, and he grimaced. In Dominic's office, Madison and another little girl were sitting on chairs in front of his desk. The little girl was sobbing in an outraged, I so deserve to cry, way, cradling something in her arms. And Alice saw with sick horror that it was a long blonde plait. She had bits of chocolate cake and cream and cherries smeared all over her face in school uniform, and the shocking, hacked-off line of her blonde hair stuck up over the back collar of her uniform.
Oh, Madison, said Alice involuntarily. How could you?
Madison's face was dead white, her eyes shining with fury. She was sitting very still and straight, with her hands and fists on her lap. The image of a little psychopathic killer brought into the police station for questioning.
You've got some explaining to do, young lady, said Nick,
and Alice nearly laughed. He sounded like a man playing the angry dad in a bad amateur play. Madison didn't say anything.
Do you want to tell your parents what happened? Said Dominic, sounding much more authentic.
Madison shook her head passionately, as if she were refusing to reveal state secrets to her torturers.
She hasn't said a word, said Dominic to Alice.
The little girl dangled the blonde plait in front of her, tears continuing to roll down her face.
Look at my hair! My mum is going to kill you, Madison, love! My hair is beautiful! It will take me years and years and years to grow it back. I will be, like, 40. You just did it because you're jealous. And you haven't even said...
Her voice quavered as if she were overcome with the horror of it.
You haven't even said sorry.
Okay, Chloe, said Dominic. Let's calm down.
Madison, apologize to Chloe,
said Alice in a grim, forbidding voice she didn't recognize. Right now.
Sorry, muttered Madison. She isn't,
wailed Chloe, looking up at Alice and Nick.
She's just saying that. Just wait till my mum gets here.
Actually, said Dominic, I don't think we will wait. I think Mr. and Mrs. Love can take Madison with them now. He squatted down in front of Madison so they were face to face. Madison, I'm suspending you from school as of now, he said. You can't be a part of this school and behave like that. Do you understand? This is very, very serious. Madison nodded. Her face had now gone from white to flaming red.
Right then. Dominic stood up. Go and get your bag and meet your parents at the gate.
Madison shot from the room, and Chloe burst into a fresh flood of tears.
Okay, Chloe, said Dominic wearily. Your mum will be here soon. Just wait here.
He ushered Nick and Alice out of the room, closing the door behind them.
There's probably not much point you having to see Kate now, while everyone's in such a state, he said.
I think you should take Madison home and try and talk to her, and get an idea of what's going on in her head. I would seriously recommend counseling. I can give you some names.
There was a sound of hurriedly clicking heels in the distance.
I bet that's Kate. Go. He waved them away as if he were saving them from the secret police. Disappear.
Nick and Alice fled through the playground. They stopped at the school gates. Nick was panting. Alice wasn't. She was much fitter than he was.
That was awful, said Alice. I feel like I cut off that child's hair myself. And the cake. She spent so long making that cake. Poor little thing.
Chloe? Said Nick.
No, Madison, said Alice. Who cares about Chloe?
Alice, our child threatened to stab her with a pair of scissors.
Well, I know that, said Alice. Nick pulled out his mobile phone from his pocket, flipped it open.
I don't see how suspending her helps anything, he said, while frowning at something on the screen of his phone. It's like they're putting their hands in the air and saying, we don't know what to do with her, absolving themselves of responsibility.
He looked up at Alice.
Not to criticize your boyfriend or anything.
I guess it's school policy, said Alice, feeling both defensive of Dominic and betrayed by him. Didn't kissing the school principal give you a free pass when it came to suspending your daughter?
Anyway, Nick looked at his watch, I'll get back to the office. I guess we better talk about this later. I don't know what sort of punishment you're thinking, but obviously it has to be severe.
What do you mean? Said Alice. I think we should talk to her now. Right now, both of us.
Nick seemed startled.
Now? You want me to be there too?
Of course I do, said Alice.
I think we should take her for a drive, and we're not going to jump in and start punishing her. I hate that word. Punishment.
Oh, sorry. I guess we should reward her. Say, well done, honey. Maybe you should consider a career in hairdressing.
Alice giggled. Nick smiled. The sunlight was shining directly onto his face. He shielded his eyes with one hand and said, I'll know when you get your memory back.
How?
The way you look at me. As soon as you remember, I'll see it in your eyes.
Will they shoot death rays at you?
Said Alice. Nick smiled sadly.
Something like that.
He looked again at his watch.
I've got a meeting at midday. I guess I could move it.
He seemed uncertain.
So you mean both of us take her for a drive somewhere?
Alice said, Is this really so unusual?
Normally you'd take charge and make it clear that my assistance was not required.
There's a new Alice in town, said Alice.
You're not wrong about that.
Nick seemed about to say something. He stopped and looked over her shoulder. Here comes our little thug. Madison was walking toward them, her school backpack held loosely in one hand, so it was almost dragging along the ground, her head hanging.
Who am I going with? She said when she got to them, not meeting their eyes.
Both of us, said Alice.
Both of you?
Madison looked up and frowned. She seemed frightened.
Come here, said Alice.
Madison stomped over to her, still staring at the ground, and Alice pulled her close and hugged her.
We're going to work this out, said Alice quietly into her hair. You, your dad and me are going to sit on the beach, eat ice creams, and work out whatever the problem is.
Madison gave a tiny gasp of surprise and burst into tears. Elizabeth's homework for Jeremy.
He keeps saying, turn the television off.
And I keep saying,
not yet.
He turned it off himself a while ago, and as soon as he did, I screamed over and over, as if he was hurting me.
A tiny bit dramatic. I will feel embarrassed later.
But it did hurt me. That loud buzzing silence after the TV was switched off was actually painful to my eardrums. He was probably worried the neighbors would call the police. After all, he looks exactly like the sort of man you expect to see dragged away in handcuffs for domestic violence. So he shrugged and turned it back on.
I'm watching Oprah now.
She's talking about an exciting new diet.
The audience is excited. I'm excited, Jay.
I might try it. I'm taking notes. They sat on the harbourside beach at Manly, near the ferry stop, in the same spot where they'd had coffee that early morning after they drove Madison through the night when she was a baby. They even had the same blue and white checked picnic rug. It was in the boot of Nick's car. The blue wasn't as bright as it was in Alice's memory, but her palms remembered its nubbly feel.
Where did we get this rug? Asked Alice as they sat down.
I don't know, said Nick. He sounded defensive. You can have it if you want. I didn't realize it was in my car.
Oh, for heaven's sake, she hadn't meant she wanted it.
It was yet another glimpse of how stupid their lives had become. Would she really have wanted to make a point about who got the picnic rug? Madison plonked herself down and sat with her arms wrapped around her knees, chin down.